baseball organists go bad. good morning. Welcome to the roundtable on this Tuesday morning. It is the 6th of December. Very nice to have you with us. And we welcome you to join us. Well, you say, how can I join you, Joe? How can I join the panel? Well, all you have to do is write to us. It's panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel at WAMC.org. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about the wide range of issues that we'll discuss in just a few moments. In the meantime, let me introduce our panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. He's ready.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Alan. Good
morning.
Hey,
Rosemary. Hey, listeners.
good morning. Good morning. Rosemary Armeo is here. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. We should note that the associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, will be joining us. If you are in a traffic copter or you have listened to another radio station or television station that provides traffic, you will know that there is a big jam up on the thruway that Mike is a part of. So we'll get a on the ground report as soon as he
arrives,
which we expect to be in a few moments. So he'll be with us. He called in, so that's good. So we'll get started and find out what is happening. We do welcome, as I mentioned, your letters roundtable at WAMC. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. By the way, I do want to mention one thing that we said yesterday that I just want to correct. We got a couple letters on it, and a lot of times I look at the letters and I say, we didn't say that. Well, we actually did say this, and I just want to correct it. We were reading a letter, and one of the letter writers said that Reddit is a white nationalist website, and
wow, I don't remember that. That's wrong.
And it's not. What they could have meant was that one of the subreddits devoted to a specific topic, that is where the information came from. But the website itself is not a white nationalist website. We got several letters about that.
Correcting.
And I just wanted to correct that and make sure that was taken care of. That is not what we meant.
It's not a white nationalist website. It just supports some people who are.
Which is a different story, which is certainly what Facebook, and we can talk about this later, but Facebook, Twitter,
they all do.
Reddit, now looking at what they can do in these cases, not only in regards to fake news, but also in terrorism.
Right.
And they're
fascinating.
They're working together on trying to figure out how not to
that's a big story.
Support that information. And when we say support, we mean giving them the technical support to get out.
Yeah, the platform.
The platform, mm-hmm. Yes. So we got that out of the way. Let's go to the topics for this morning, and we will begin by the mistrial in South Carolina. We're going to talk about both North Carolina and South Carolina this morning. And we begin in Charleston, South Carolina, where the trial of Michael Slager, the police officer whose videotaped killing of an unarmed black man staggered a nation already embroiled in a debate about police misconduct and racial bias in law enforcement, ended in a mistrial on Monday. We sort of saw this one coming. Judge Clifton Newman's decision to halt the proceedings came 3 days after jurors signaled that they were within one vote of returning a guilty verdict against Mr. Slager, who could have been convicted of murder or voluntary manslaughter in the fatal shooting of Walter Scott. But on Monday, in a final note to Judge Newman, jurors said that despite the best efforts of all members, they were unable to come to a unanimous decision. The outcome was disappointingly familiar to critics of police practices and conduct and demonstrated the steep hurdles associated with prosecuting a police officer for shooting while on duty. I certainly understand that, although it also looks to a system where one person who says no and sticks to their guns can cause a mistrial.
Henry Fonda.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very rare thing, they say. I find it really difficult to explain. Of course, you did say we had a hint of this several days ago. But if any case looked to be black and white, cut and dry, use any cliche you want, it was this one where the video captured by a citizen is so clear. And it shows the black man who ends up dead running away. It shows the officer planting a taser on his body after he's already fallen, handcuffing his lifeless body, and then reporting to his superiors that he felt in fear of his life and under attack by a man who had grabbed a taser from him. None of that is supported. So again, it's really, really hard to understand this one juror. And he himself gave a statement that is also difficult to understand, that he sympathizes with the family, doesn't want them to think that no one will be punished for what happened to their loved one, but he just can't find it in his heart to find the police officer guilty.
Isn't that Isn't that an issue, though, that should have been caught in jury selection?
Well, you would think so. And a bigger one is there was, we don't know who the holdout juror was,
right,
but there were 11 white people and one black man on that jury in a county that's majority black in a case involving a black man's death. Was that a fair jury makeup to begin with?
Good question.
Should that not
11
have been
to 1. That's 11 to
11
1
is, white yeah. to 1 black.
Yes, I know, but 11 to 1 in terms of the what we think was the vote in the jury.
Correct.
Is quite something. Now, they get several other bites of the apple here.
Yes.
In other words, they didn't find a not guilty verdict. So therefore, the judge declared a mistrial, which means, and the prosecutor says, we're going to do it again.
Right.
And maybe this time we'll get, you know, 12 people who go with us. And as to your question, Joe, about the voir dire, which is so interesting, you never know. You never know what people...
No, you never know what people say and what they mean.
What they really think.
What they're thinking. I mean, clearly a question that any prosecutor would have asked during the voir dire is, you know, can you, if the officer is found guilty, can you vote for a guilty?
There are several other things. One is that the officer was amazingly compelling on the stand. I think he's guilty of sin. I would have had no problem finding him guilty on the basis of the video, basically. But he was really compelling on the stand. He goes, it's awful. My family is suffering. His family is suffering. It's awful. And his life truly has been pulled apart. His wife had a baby shortly after he went into prison, into jail. So I think that might have made a difference. It's hard. This is a man who, again, said he was in fear of his life. We don't know the kind of training or the recruiting that goes on there, but someone, a white person in a black community, was he in fear for his life? We don't know that. So it's really hard to convict police officers because we need them. And the better way to do this, I think, has been Barack Obama's use of the Department of Justice to go in and look at police practices overall, look at the whole system. And that may go away under
Trump.
Well,
he'll face federal charges, too.
He will face federal charges, and he may face another, you know, state trial.
Oh, no, he will.
He is facing
a
federal
trial.
They say
he will, yeah.
State court.
And they said that, and we're talking about the governor, you know, is the Republican governor is certainly
Nikki Haley, who will be leaving.
Yeah,
but
has certainly been quite clear about her feelings about this too, and they are not what one might expect in terms of this divide. She's been where, in my opinion and your opinion, she should be.
Yeah.
However, the one thing that got me really reading the article, Joe, was the idea that even the defense counsel said he should not have run away.
The defense counsel said the prosecutor has said that. I know they did make a big deal about that.
Yeah.
He contributed to his own death by running away.
Oh, no, you're right.
I think it was the prosecutor who said that.
Yeah, of course you're right.
Well, the other thing—
Probably would have had a motion for bad defense if the defense had said that.
There's two—the two extraordinary things that happened in this case. One was the note that the holdout juror wrote to the judge, which is usually comes through the foreman. In this case, did not. And that was when we learned that they didn't believe they could, in good conscience, find the officer guilty. Also, then there was the what they refer to as a dynamite charge that came from the judge, who said, "I know you're deadlocked, but I'm going to give you several more hours." They came back and said, "We still can't do it." And he said, "Okay, I'm going to give you the weekend. Come back, and we don't want to go have another trial. We want to see if we can work it on this."
Wasn't there another note that? Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm obviously wrong about some of the stuff. But wasn't there another note that said he should be out of here? In other words, that the holdout should be—there's one person in the holdout should be out of here?
I think there was. Yeah,
he has issues. He needs to be out of here.
I think there was some dissension. Yes, within the jury pool, which of course the judge was trying to direct the jurors to get along and to respect each other's opinions. However, to come to a consensus.
But it must be something to sit there, right? And say with 11 people down your throat, you know, really giving you a hard time. It must be something to sit there and say. You know, I have the wherewithal to stick to my guns.
There was another note saying that it wasn't that cut, and it wasn't that divided, that clearly divided, that minds apparently were being changed back and
Henry
forth.
Henry Fonda again.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it really did remind me of the movie.
Was it the last Angry Man? No.
One Angry Man.
No.
What is it? Listeners will correct us here.
No.
12
Angry Men.
12 Angry Men. There we go.
That movie.
How many? I think I've told this story before, but you know, you have these things that happen in your life that change you in I think profound ways. And for me, it was serving on a jury where, first of all, during the voir dire, they said. You know, do you? And I was, you know, a reporter working in the region, and they said, you know, do you know about this case? Yes. Do you know about the defense attorney? Yes. Yeah. Do you know the prosecutor? Yes. Yeah. Do you know about this? Do you know the judge? Yes. And they said, is there anything else that we should know that could keep you from the jury? And I said, well, the foreman is my mother-in-law, and they still chose me. Okay, so we're both on the jury. All right. So, but I'm looking at my watch, watching this case, and I'm thinking, all right, this comes to the jury at 10:15. We're out of here by 10:40 because this is really cut and dry. You know, and we were there for a day and a half.
Wow.
People take this stuff really seriously.
They do, and it really surprised me because
they put themselves into it, and they say, there, but for the grace of God goes I. Yeah.
And they say, well, I don't believe the police officer. I don't believe. In this case, I think they may have planned it, and you're like, "Wow, really?" And the little seeds that the prosecution or the defense rather planted, you could see them start to take. Mm-hmm. You know,
did you let them off?
Yes. No. We did not.
You found him guilty.
We found him guilty, but it took a lot longer than I ever thought it would. But it's a difficult thing, and I don't know.
Did you ask for the knife? No. For those of you who think I'm being capricious here, that was a big part of the Henry Fonda movie.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. but it is. It's not as easy as it sounds of just finding somebody.
No.
Although, to your original point, everyone from outside who looked at
it's so easy. Yeah.
Court watchers and pundits who were on the various said that this could be a slam dunk.
And it wasn't just a murder charge. It wasn't like you had to find him guilty
charges.
Of murder.
Yeah.
They
no.
had choices. You know, so that's
manslaughter.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was so. The shock that went up everywhere was palpable, and it reminded me of the O.J. Simpson trial when that jury verdict came in, and then it was a racial divide. I don't think we have that now. I think there are many whites saying, what? The same as the family.
Yeah.
But in O.J. Simpson, it was the same thing. What was that jury listening to?
Okay, so just to be clear about this, you're a police officer, mm-hmm. And you say to stop, and somebody runs away. What do you do? Let him run.
You don't kill him.
No,
yeah, you
kill.
Let him run.
Well, what do you do?
Nothing. You yell at him. You try to stop it. You call for reinforcements.
I think that, I mean, I'm going from a television show,
version.
You know, yeah. where you, mm-hmm. yes, you call for backup, right?
Well, on Highway Patrol, they were a charm.
Well, I don't
know. That was the 1950s.
But, you know, it isn't just that, Alan. It's the lies he told later. He said
no, that's really
he was in danger.
Yeah.
And he still, even on the stand, could not explain how the taser ended up in his hand being placed by the body.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of troubling.
I do want to mention that, just to clarify, the jury had three options besides deadlocking: a conviction for murder, a conviction for voluntary manslaughter, or an acquittal. In South Carolina, a murder conviction can lead to a life sentence, and manslaughter carries a term of two to 30 years. So.
Yeah, which is, I mean, there was some variability in there. It wasn't like, you know, if we convict him, his life is over. That was not necessarily so.
And, of course, the video was a big part of this case, and that was huge. And prosecutors now say they will seek a new trial for Mr. Slager, who was fired after the shooting, and the Scott family expressed confidence that he would ultimately be convicted. Mr. Slager's attorney, Andrew Savage, did not comment as he left the courtroom where jurors had heard testimony for about 4 weeks. A long trial, too,
yeah,
we should note.
It's expensive, too. Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you have a couple of letters?
Yes, but none of them are on the subject.
Oh.
Interesting.
Darn it. Well, we've got a minute and a half, so let's go with them anyway, and then
this is from Mike. According to Ben Carson's supporters, his qualification for Housing and Urban Development Secretary is the fact that Carson lived in federally subsidized housing as a child and operated on children whose parents lived in similar housing. Using that logic, my wife is qualified to be Veterans Affairs Secretary. I did 4 in the Air Force, and our son was in the Marine Corps. And that's from Mike Farinell.
Did Carson actually live in subsidized
yes.
housing? His comment
they
was, I lived in Detroit.
No, they showed it in the paper today.
Okay.
They showed the housing
okay.
project. Yeah, okay. From Gina. Returning last night from Standing Rock, statements from National Guard and Governor Dalrymple, notwithstanding, the protest was overwhelmingly positive, upbeat, and safe. The only violence and anxiety came from the government side. The stand down was directly due to the veterans' arrival. Women and children had been targeted for arrest, but no one wanted a brutalized, war tested veterans. Great thanks are due. And that's from Gina. Gina. The problem for me about this fire, I think it we're talking about the
Oakland.
Fire.
The Oakland fire. All right.
Is were there parties there before? If there were, did any city officials know about it? If so, fire inspectors should have been all over it. Begin foiling, reporters.
I'm sure they
Good
will.
Point.
We'll
Good point.
We'll talk about more of those.
Somebody's going to take the rap for this. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, and
well, with 30
sure, right?
what 6 lives at stake,
yeah,
someone
sure.
ought to
Somebody's
be
take
answerable.
The rap.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have many other topics to discuss. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Spain has arrived. Yes.
Yay.
You know, I was listening to what I thought was a truly articulate discussion of the whole issue of juries and the randomness that can happen when a juror decides to just dig in and not change their mind and not be compelled by whatever the other juror has been convinced by.
Now, you've been on a jury, right?
No, I never got that far. I got placed.
They won't let me on.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I always want to be.
They take one look at me and say, what, are you kidding?
You know, sort of in our culture, we make a hero of the person who holds out, stands on principle no matter what. And the whole jury system is built on you have to be open to suasion, right?
Yes, to discuss it. And then there is a person who is that force to get you discussing and talking about, and you can go back and find out more information. And it's a fascinating process.
Even if there's somebody with too much time on their hands.
Well, yeah.
Do you get it? Do you get what I mean by that?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, that
I
does
want to be around for lunch.
It does bring a problem where, right, most of the jurors are retired people because they're available, you know. And it's disproportionately older people that serve on juries.
Well, let's ask Rosemary.
Which might have a different point of view than maybe.
Let's ask Rosemary, who tends to be a bit ageist about this stuff, about whether or not, you know, older people should be overrepresented on a jury.
No. Unless, I mean, it's a jury of your peers, so who's the person who's accused?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually do believe in that, instead we have all these formulas. Like, that's why I asked about the black-white crime that this police shooting represents. Was it right that 11 people in the jury were white? The accused is white, so maybe that
and
is
the population
a jury
of the
his
county,
peers.
You said, was
It's majority black.
Majority
yeah.
black, yeah.
So I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anything about being old precludes you from being on a jury, which is about listening and reasoning. I think old people do that well.
Hey, let me ask you a media question. Do you think that the aggressive reporting of this will reveal who that juror was and what the dynamic
Absolutely.
Was? So there'll be more to
I would love for it to do that, but judges and courts have made it increasingly difficult to talk to jurors.
They
and
have
I,
a legal right after the trial to speak. They have a constitutional right to exercise the First, you know, the First Amendment right.
They truly do, but not you don't you tend not to when a judge says to you, "Don't talk to the media. The media will try to get to talk to you. You don't have to do it." The instructions to juries are increasingly anti-press.
Well, and in this case, it's also. Fraught, right? I mean, it's
kind of dangerous.
Yeah,
in this
it would
case,
be dangerous in this case.
Yeah.
So,
well, Jill wrote in and said, "Good morning, panel. Okay,
good morning.
Okay, perhaps he should not have run away, but by saying he contributed to his own death, isn't that blaming the victim?
Yes.
He should have not been shot in the back.
Yes.
Right. It's like when you have a car accident and somebody broadsides you, passes through a stop sign, and the insurance company says, "You're 25% responsible for that accident because you were passing through the intersection. Had you not been there, you wouldn't have been hit by my client who ran through the stop sign."
Yeah, you know, here's one other thing, too, that maybe there could be a change in. That officer, part of his fear, he testified, was because his radio reported back when he did the check that this guy was wanted on for criminal offenses. The criminal offenses were not paying child support. But criminal offenses sounds like he shot somebody, he assaulted a cop. You don't know. Why can't that report be just slightly bit more accurate?
He has a record or a nonviolent record as opposed
something,
to a violent
yeah,
record. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there. I hope that these cases aren't just – you know, we're going to scream at each other about race again and discrimination and the role of cops, all of which I do find important. But let's talk about procedures that could prevent this.
As I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, we would be talking both about South Carolina and North Carolina. I do want to move to the state of North Carolina, where it is finally official. The last and most heated outstanding gubernatorial race of the year has come to a close with the incumbent GOP Governor Pat McCrory of North Carolina conceding on Monday in a video to Democratic challenger Roy Cooper. Despite continued questions that should be answered regarding the voting process, "I personally believe that the majority of our citizens have spoken," said McCrory. McCrory is now the first North Carolina governor to lose re-election. His concession brings to a close a nearly month-long saga that seemed to grow more, not less, convoluted and heated by the day, in a four-year governorship that was marked by flashpoints on LGBT rights, police brutality, and gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, you know, it was fascinating. It looked clear to most people that he had lost. McCrory had lost, and he just was a sore loser. I mean, he just didn't want to let it go. Some people get into that kind of situation, and they just can't let it go. And I think that's what happened with him. And you know, justice prevailed. I was really concerned that there might be some trickery afoot.
What this story underscores for me is how just unusual North Carolina is, and how you know, they throw out a governor who championed suppression of LGBT rights.
Right.
They elected, you know, they supported Donald Trump through their electoral votes there. The city of Charlotte was the enlightened place where this whole LGBT thing began, when they passed a local ordinance that the legislature then jumped in to supersede and say, "You can't give these rights of, you know, bathroom privileges to LGBT people, et cetera, et cetera." And it's where some of the greatest civil rights, you know, leaders have come from. And the Ku Klux Klan had a rally there last weekend. I mean, it is amazingly diverse in its political situation.
Well, it was exceedingly close vote, which is what set this up. So I'm not ready to give North Carolina kudos for being fabulously progressive and sweet. To me, the case was about looking for abuses of the voting system. And so I sort of supported him doing this. I don't think we should call people sore losers. Donald Trump calling Jill Stein a sore loser because she wants a recount in those
or
in
Alan
states.
Calling
That's what you just did, and there is that tendency. Okay, like give it up, just accept it. But I think that our system, there are enough questions about it these days that I welcome the chance to have a recount and to take a look at these votes. And what you found, when that's why McCrory eventually gave up, was that no, there was not abuse, and in fact, the votes we found that were counted the wrong way were for the opponent, not for him. So that gives a certain proof of the integrity of the system, which is really important.
Well, you make a point,
but it did. I treasure that.
I got
it. Treasure that.
But it also, as I
mentioned in the article, it grew heated and more convoluted as the days went by. I mean, it got ugly as it went on. Mm-hmm. In the recount and so forth. So,
I mean, this is a place that has repressed votes of minorities, and that has happened across the South and other places too, not just the South. So I think that any exposure, any light thrown on voter suppression or abuse of the electoral system, which is the excuse given for suppression, is really important.
Yeah. The other interesting aspect of this story was it asserts that he is the first North Carolina governor to be unseated.
Is there a term limit, by the way? Is two terms? In many southern states.
Yeah, I believe there is term limits in it. I think it might be two. And the other assertion it makes, it's just a handful of sitting governors to lose in the modern era. I mean, it does show you the strength of the incumbency when you're a governor. There's not been too many, although we experienced one in New York State back in 1994. That was very unusual. But that had term limits been in place, that wouldn't have happened.
North Carolina, it's two consecutive terms. Yes.
Yeah. I'm all for term limits.
Yes. As Mario Cuomo famously said, there are term limits. They call them elections.
Yeah, well, that's what the incumbents always say.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the panel this morning. Well, it's time to talk politics, ladies and gentlemen. So here we go. Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. Let's talk about him for a moment. He is President-elect Donald Trump's choice for national security advisor. This is important for a couple of reasons. Because he is Donald Trump's choice for national security advisor. He also is apparently...
Do we know if that means, Joe, do we know if that position needs confirmation?
It does not.
It does not.
Okay. It does not.
And he's lucky it doesn't.
We now find out we knew this, that he has used social media to push conspiracy theories about Hillary Clinton. Both he and his son, we should say, the Twitter habits of both he and his son are now attracting renewed attention after a man fired a rifle on Sunday inside of Comet Ping Pong, a Washington pizza restaurant that was the subject of false news stories during the campaign, tying it and the Clinton campaign to a child sex trafficking ring. Well before he joined the Trump campaign, the elder Mr. Flynn, 57, a former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, published unsubstantiated claims about Islamic laws spreading in the U.S. and about the attack on the American diplomatic compound in Benghazi. In the emergence this year as the angry former general out to help Mr. Trump clean up Washington, Mr. Flynn added wild stories about Hillary Clinton to these unproven tales that he was telling. 6 days before the election, for instance, Mr. Flynn posted on Twitter a fake news story that claimed, we keep on using the term fake, but these are lies, right? Is that another word for that?
Fake news is something that's made up and is not true. I guess that would be a lie.
Okay.
Intentionally.
Fake. All right. Yeah.
And
yes,
many people also confuse fake and mistakes in news copy. Like, that's fake news. So it's good that you're clarifying the
yes.
term.
Yes. Okay. So 6 days before the election, for instance, Mr. Flynn posted on Twitter a fake news story that claimed the police and prosecutors in New York had found evidence linking Mrs. Clinton and much of her senior campaign staff to pedophilia, money laundering, perjury, and other felonies. You decide, Mr. Flynn wrote in a Twitter message on November 2nd, though it appeared there was little doubt what he thought. The actual tweet said, "You decide, NYPD blows whistle on new Hillary emails, money laundering, sex crimes with children, etc. must read," and then there is a link to the fake news story. Okay. "The views Mr. Flynn has aired on social media, including messages that many viewed as crossing the line into Islamophobia, and his willingness to spread fake news stories, had already prompted questions about his fitness to be Mr. Trump's security advisor. But the gunfire on Sunday was a violent turn in the debate about how fake news is reshaping the United States, and it cast a spotlight on those like Mr. Flynn who actively spread false stories about Mrs. Clinton."
I go
to the panel.
And he is not the one called Mad Dog.
No.
No,
that's another general.
Enough, that's sort of a different issue. But if Donald Trump continues to surround himself with people like Ben Carson, who has zero experience, and we can talk about that a little later perhaps, to run the HUD, basically Health and Urban Development, and we talked about other appointments that he's made. Some look promising, but he's putting a denier of global warming, in charge of picking the environmental people that are going to be in his campaign. He has a guy who thinks we should get rid of Medicare and just issue vouchers in charge of Health and Human Services. It just seems like it's destined for going off the cliff. If you thought that there was a deadlock in Washington, gridlock in Washington before with President Obama, I can't imagine that we'll have anything else.
I don't know why. You got a Republican House, you got a Republican Senate, you got a Republican
There's going to
president.
Be a few Republicans who have a conscience, and they're going to step forward. Predict this.
By the way, you're right.
It's not going to be Paul Ryan. Who? No. It's not going to be Mitch McConnell.
It'll happen in the Senate.
Rosemary's point, again, is good in that the House of Representatives is basically a dictatorship. It is. One person, it's an iron law of oligarchy. One person rises to the top and runs it. The Senate, you're right, Mike, there may be a few who will rise to the occasion and show themselves, as they did a few Republicans in the Watergate scandal, when it gets too bad. But this is terrible. And by the way, when somebody says something like Flynn is saying, We see a rise in hate crimes. There's no question. The New York City Police Department is now reporting a humongous rise in hate crimes in New York City. We have a patrol woman with a hijab who gets shot.
Yep. Yep. I saw that story.
With somebody yelling at her and the rest of it. And we see Jewish groups getting together with Muslim groups, which is appropriate because they know what happens when one group is allowed to be scapegoated. But when you get a guy like this, it's intolerable. It's just intolerable. I think he may have to pull him out of there.
The hoax about the child sex trafficking ring began spreading shortly before the election, and the restaurant, its employees, and nearby businesses soon found themselves subjected to threats and harassment because of it, despite a complete absence of evidence. So you have this completely made-up story, and then everyone comes out and says, oh, by the way, this is a completely made-up story, and they still are the subject of of the threats. Then on Sunday, Edgar Welch, 28 years old, of Salisbury, North Carolina, went to Comet Ping Pong in northwestern Washington armed with a rifle. The police said he told them later that he had gone to the restaurant to self-investigate, was his term.
He wanted to save the kids.
The sex trafficking hoax.
His father of daughters wanted to save the kids. the wackos have been unleashed.
And they interviewed the poor guy who owned the pizza thing. Sounded like a young guy.
Yeah.
And it sounded, he said, I'm just trying to make a dollar. What in the world is going on here?
So all those listeners who keep saying, are you playing the same record over and over again? Give him a chance. Trump could do good for the country. What do you say about this stuff?
Okay, can I just want to add one more log to the fire, if I will, before you make that very important point. Is that so? All of what we just discussed happened. Okay, so we're now kind of on an even plane here, and believe that this is bad, right?
So fake news, yes.
You will remember that at the beginning of the article I wrote about Flynn's son. Now his son comes out after this whole story, just hours after the gunfire. He goes on Twitter and says, until Pizzagate proven to be false, it'll remain a story. The left seems to forget Podesta emails and the many coincidences, in quotes, tied to it. And again, back to the original article.
Now, I know I'm not allowed to use the word nut, because I got criticized the last time I used it by mental health people who say you can't use the word nut.
How about unstable?
Unstable is a good word. This guy seems very unstable.
How about despicable and evil? I mean, if you deliberately promulgate... No, he may not be unstable. He may be just an evil person who wants to promulgate fake news for to change things.
Let me throw in nepotism on this, because the son isn't just supporting daddy. The son is also working for the government. He now has a GOV ad to his URL, and he has worked previously as an aide to his father.
Wow.
He's been brought aboard on the transition team.
Oh.
So if Ivanka and Jared could work in an informal arrangement with dad, why not Mike Flynn's crazy?
Well, at least he's not using his own server.
He's crazy.
He's not using his own server. There's got to be something to that.
Petraeus did that. It's okay now, though, because he's Trump's people. Oh, don't get me started.
I think we already did.
I think you are.
I know. I'm a self-absorbed, educated, liberal elitist.
You know, you said after the election, Rosemary, you were going to steer clear of these news programs and kind of just lighten up a little bit.
I don't watch cable TV anymore, but you have to read the article so you can, know what they're talking, what Joe is talking about. That's all I do. And even that
obligated.
Is too much.
the two things that... To Rosemary's point, he has served as chief of staff to his father, the younger Michael Flynn. Michael G. Flynn. Michael M. Flynn Jr. is his hashtag on Twitter. The main difference in the son's Twitter feed is that he appears to have shown even less restraint than his father when it comes to spreading conspiracy theories about Mrs. Clinton and her campaign. Which by the way, I will also note that, has quite a bit of, right after that was posted within hours, it had already had...
How many views?
Like 4,000 likes, and had been retweeted 3,000 times. So, I mean, that's also the problem with this stuff, is then it keeps going to the base, which adds to these stories. All right, we're going to take some letters, and then we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get to even more letters, because we have a lot, and then we'll catch up. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Bob says, jurors who lie in the voir dire process to get on the jury are nothing new, and these secret nullifiers are, under current rules, almost impossible to overcome. The best fix would be to change the rules so that after verifying that such a situation exists, a judge could replace the obstructionist with an alternative juror even after deliberations have begun. I suppose so, but that's playing with fire, all right.
Yeah, that would be... Yeah. Regarded by many other measures as jury tampering when you do it after the fact.
Jones said, when I was in my late 30s, I was on several juries. One was a murder trial. It was 11 guilty, one not guilty. We had to stay overnight. I did not want to be there. Personal problems at home, social club bar fight. I was the one who held out. I was appalled at how the other jurors were absolutely out for blood that the defendant was a Haitian immigrant. I would never want to be judged by my so-called peers.
Wait, social club bar fight?
I think that may have been the case. There was a social club bar fight.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting, Mike. I didn't want to understand either. Susan says, glad to hear Rosemary bring up the questionable training of cops. It is clear it is very poor. As a hospital social worker and foster mom, I've constantly seen overreaction on their part to situations they're called in to assist with. I've seen them escalate rather than de-escalate volatile situations. That's what's happening in these cases. The line staff in residential schools have better training than cops, for God's sakes. You know, I've had a lot to do with police in my life and worked for the New York City Police Department, or with the New York City Police Department, and taught at John Jay. I can tell you, I think the question is not the training as much as the selection. In other words, who they are picking to be cops, the so-called F test. You know, you give them a test and where are their values. And that, I think, is as important as the training issue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, anyway. Proper recruitment and proper training. Yeah. You know, once you find, promising recruits, I think training really is a big part of it.
I'm going to hold you there, Alan. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have more letters. We have a lot, many more topics to discuss. Rosemary, we're going to say goodbye to you.
Yes.
You are going to be away for a few days, so people don't think that Rosemary
I have not been fired.
She's been banished.
No.
So you won't be with us next week, but the week after you'll be back. So
yes, we
wish you safe travels. We thank you very much for being here.
And
we will continue our conversation after this short break. We go. All right. I as much as I wanted to turn the mics on during the snapping lesson, I just decided I wouldn't.
You see, he snaps on the one and the three.
Yeah,
you slap
it's very
snap.
Unhip.
Snap
two and a four.
Two and four.
It's much hipper.
All I know is that Ray was snapping his fingers to the music, and I was snapping right along with him at the exact same time.
Incorrect, sir.
So his usual way, he turns around and says, "I was doing it wrong."
Well, not wrong, just not right.
Unhip. I think the term was very unhip.
Very unhip.
Very unhip.
Well, but he plays the banjo. You got to cut him some slack. Hipness, not, you know, he has many fine qualities. Hipness.
Okay, you know. Name a few.
By the way.
We don't have that much time.
By the way, this just in, Ray Graff has joined the panel, so in case you haven't figured that one out.
Am I happy to be here.
He came in to do the news, and they wouldn't let him out of the
room. That's right.
That's right. So Rosemary had a plane to catch, so Ray didn't, and he's here. So
no, I wish.
Good for you.
I wish I did.
All right. We were, before we went to break, we had a lot of letters, and Alan was going through them. So let's continue that process, if we may.
To all, please comment on Kellyanne Conway's supergroup she is putting together, The Trump Revolution, article on this internet this AM. God help us. We need to stand strong, and thank you all for helping us navigate all of this. I even have my husband listening to you now.
Oh, all right.
All right. Dear panel, thanks for the thoughtful discussion.
Are we going to comment on it?
Anybody?
I'm glad that your husband is listening.
Me too.
Okay, all right. Not about the supergroup, though.
Right.
No, Clapton and Ginger
Baker.
I don't even know if it's real or fake news.
I have looked during the break, was looking it up, and I could not find anything, so I don't know where
the story originated.
You've got
to appreciate that. The right is also susceptible to fake news. There are people on the left who, for sinister reasons, will create fake stories.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point, Mike. A dear panel. Or Pinnell. Thank you for the thoughtful discussion about the proliferation on fake news stories. Please also include the ignorance of the folks who digest these stories and accept them as truth without researching their validity. There is a lot of blame to go around, but ignorant consumers of fake news deserve a wake-up call. You know, I was thinking about doing a Vox Pop, a Tuesday Vox Pop.
Today is Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, on ignorance. You know, on ignorance.
You mean ignorance?
Better block a few hours for that, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, do people think that there ought to be some means test? I don't mean to how much money you make, but how much, how you think.
I think that was
for what?
That was the movement that was championed by my boss Rex Smith, news literacy. I mean, it's giving people the tools to recognize valid news sources and stories within the stories. What are what's good attribution and what's.
But wait, well, to what end? What would this test be for? To be a citizen? To be to vote?
No. Well, the problem really is we've gone through civics. We've gone through you're exactly right, Ray. That's the problem with making these judgments, because that's what they used to do when they gave people literacy tests in order to
this
vote.
This is not a good thing.
No, well, it's not. But on the other hand, one could make the argument that there's some people who are incredibly ignorant out there and who choose without knowing what they're doing and don't know what the consequences to themselves will be. That's called stupid.
Stupid is a pejorative term.
But
stupid
are.
Is what stupid gets.
But I think there are always people who, for whatever reasons, maybe by choice or just by their situation, were ignorant of what was going on elsewhere. And there currently are, of course. But now they're susceptible to this whole notion of fake news because of social media. You know, they might have a Facebook page and they'll look at pictures and look at cat videos and they'll see stories about conspiracy theories involving pizza places in Washington, D.C. and pedophile conspiracies involving candidates, stuff like that. I mean, all in one place, and it's discerning what is credible against what is just entertainment. And
well, good point. All good points.
Well, isn't that part of the responsibility of living in a republic or a democracy?
I agree. I think we do have a responsibility. Do they teach civics in high school anymore?
I think they do, but I don't think it means much.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Okay, you look puzzled, right?
No,
puzzled?
Well, no more than usual. Pray continue.
Dear panel, thanks. We did that. Okay, a lot of grand blame to go around, but ignorant consumers of fake news deserve a wake-up call. That's Joanne. Aren't there, says Bo, couldn't there be consequences for tweeting lies, fake news as blatant as the Hillary Clinton stuff? Libel, slander, a well-financed and executed suit. Finding the effective pushback for this rising and damaging fake news stuff is becoming an important priority. Well, you know, the Supreme Court in the United States, New York Times, the famous New York Times case, said that if you've injected yourself into the public sphere, you're fair game, no matter what, basically, to prove that you've suffered as a result of it's almost impossible. It's almost impossible. I've never liked that ruling, by the way.
Well, let's take a hypothetical. Say someone puts out in fake news that a certain herb or plant will cure whatever malady someone has.
I saw it just the other day.
In fact, it's a toxic plant. You know, I'd say that if someone put that information out and they broadcasted it on social media, on television or something like that, that they should be held liable for injury to somebody who believes them.
Well, wait a second. But what if I, Alan Chartok, who has injected myself into the public sphere, like it or not, why are you smiling?
Alan, just go closer then.
There we go. And somebody tells terrible lies about me, I'm not allowed to sue them.
You're a public figure, Alan.
I know that. I don't like it. Okay. So, panel, very often victims are partially responsible for the consequences of their action. To say that the victim had nothing to do with the officer's action is willful blindness to the complexities of a real-life event. The officer should not have shot, but running away did not help. Prosecutor said that, too.
Running away did not help, but I think you guys spoke about it in the first half hour pretty articulately. Getting shot several times in the back and you're unarmed.
I do want to make a quick, when we were talking earlier, that we had a letter about Kellyanne Conway and this and the super group. And that's what I looked up and I couldn't find anything. Our panelist, Teresa Bourgeois, wrote to us and said that it is a thing. It was actually something she's going to be joining us tomorrow, and it's actually something she wanted to bring up. But it is a new pro-Trump group, and it was something that Kellyanne Conway could be at the helm and sort of be working on the outside to help promote
the
administration.
Is there proof of this?
Proof.
Okay.
Yes.
Panel, more important than McCrory's loss was flipping the state Supreme Court to a 4-3 Democratic. There is discussion in Republican-dominated General Assembly of adding two more seats. The only reason that there was an election at all in state Supreme Court was by order of a federal judge. And Jeff says, hi, panel. I know this is not relative to what you've been speaking about in the early part of the show, but I'm just curious what happens if a state like like one of the states that was so close that is being recounted chooses to give their electoral votes to some other than Trump or Hillary. Neither Trump nor Hillary would have the necessary electoral votes to become president. You know what happens then, folks? It goes into the Republican-dominated House of Representatives.
And nothing will change.
That's right. Okay. Barbara says, as someone who might have been... who has been fighting for legislation to protect the disabled in New York State, I'm firmly against term limits. Some bills have been sitting for years waiting to get to the floor to be read, considered, and voted on at any one time. There can be thousands of bills. The frustration and disappointment of getting close only to have the senator or assembly person who has sponsored a bill you have been fighting for retire or lose an election is devastating. Yeah. Well, we political scientists, I have to say, people say to me all the time, come on, you know, let people have the term limit is the election. That's enough. I'm for term limits.
But you could look at it another way.
Yeah.
If there are term limits, then maybe it would encourage these people who say, well, I don't have to run for re-election. All right. I will finally take a stand on this issue.
Possible.
So maybe that's
possible. I'm all for it. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
I may be mistaken, but fake news can be called. But can fake news be called propaganda? Sure.
Right? Yeah.
That's a good name for it.
Rebecca says General Flynn's son, who is his chief of staff, also regularly tweets links from white supremacist sites, and additionally went on Twitter to rant about the truth of at Pizzagate lie when the gunman was arrested this weekend. There are dangerous people coming into this cabinet. Well, there you go.
Okay, what else you got?
I got plenty.
All right, let's hear it.
You know, it's interesting that the letters were not coming in until you started talking about the president-elect and his upcoming administration.
Oh, I see. That's true. You don't talk about Trump. You talk about state government from early morning to late, and now you get three letters.
Yeah.
You get three telephone calls on the Vox Pop. You mentioned the Trumpster. Boom.
Trumpster to you, or President-elect Trumpster.
Yeah, President Trumpster.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. I apologize. Blair says, a young African-American cab driver told me that Hillary had members of her Secret Service detail murdered. God. Now we know that Hillary was targeted by a vast white right-wing conspiracy, RNC, Breitbart, Fox Russia, with fake news. They had her in their sights for 20 years. It would be better for the Dems to wait a few years before hanging the target on another candidate, and that's Arlen. Janet says... I've read several accounts of the possible constitutional crisis caused by Donald Trump's conflict of interest and wish clarification from those more educated in government than I. If this should occur and the new president is impeached, would the cabinet from hell remain in place? Well, when presidents leave, quite often, remember Harry Truman took over from, they wait a while and then they
do their own
move
thing.
Their own thing. And Lyndon Johnson certainly did it. When he became the president after Kennedy. Yeah. Glenn says, why is it that the Republicans think it's okay to conduct their own foreign policy apart from Obama? Republican senators write a letter to Iranian mullahs, invite Israeli heads of state, and now this. If the Dems did something like this to a Republican president, the whining would be heard on Alpha Centauri. Is that far away?
It's a fairly close star.
Yeah.
Billions. It's one of the closer ones.
Yeah. And dear panel, while the president-elect will propose many changes, both via edict and by congressional... I'm going very slow. Let me tell you why. Joe had to get up to go out on an emergency of the room.
Yeah.
And he's our leader, right?
Right.
So he's not here, and we don't know what to do without him.
Well, now, thank God he's back.
Now he's back.
Yes.
So now we can continue. Dear panel, while the president-elect, I was going to go very slowly with this letter.
Right.
This is next to last.
Well, you're
letter.
Reading very well.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Dear panel, while the president-elect will propose many changes, both via edict and by congressional mandate, we must remember most of those changes will be implemented by thousands of government bureaucrats. How fast or slow these changes occur will depend on these folks. I remember some of the changes mandated by Bush 2, primarily in the EPA. moving at glacial speed due to the efforts or lack thereof of federal employees disagreeing with the proposed policy changes. I think we should encourage these folks to implement changes as slowly as possible. We have 2 years, then the entire House is up for re-election, and maybe we can elect progressives. Yes, and maybe a pig just flew through the room. Okay, and
that was me.
Joe came in.
Yeah,
it's not a very nice thing to say, but all right, Alan.
Allison says, no. Come on, you can't make me take the blame for that.
All right.
Allison says, maybe all the fake news is designed to create chaos, so nobody believes everything or anything.
Bam.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true. Right?
Rosemary knows about Masha Gessen. What she says on this is how Putin killed the free press in 1 year. 1 year! We can lighten it up. It's too scary. Our country is not that old. Our first dictatorship is starting? Question mark. Allison. That's what I got, Joe.
All right. So let's go to Mike Spain and his story for today, which goes to what we were just talking a moment ago about the incredible interest in state politics. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. No, actually, this is I think we're going to hear more about this. This is the story that comes from the progressives in the New York State Senate, the mainstream Democrats. It looks like now, because of the outcome of a highly contested and recount race down on Long Island, that out of 63 members of the state Senate, the New York State Senate, 32 of them are going to be Democrats. Now, ordinarily, that would mean the Democrats have a majority. However, they're not going at current, if things go as they are currently, they are not going to have the majority in the Senate because of two factors. One is a sort of breakout group of Democrats called the Independent Democratic Conference.
And I call them the traitors.
Yes, and some others do. And there's also a Brooklyn senator who's a Democrat named Simcha Felder, but he generally moves across and votes and sits in caucuses with the Republicans. So now there's a push by the Senate leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and other progressives who are saying that Governor Andrew Cuomo should step in and use his political, influence to force these independent Democrats and Senator Felder to go across and form a full majority and let the Democrats take over the Senate, since they do hold a majority. And he can use his political capital to do that, they say, and he's under a lot of pressure. So that's created a debate. Traditionally, Alan, you probably could speak to this. Governors have stayed clear of the Senate races to try to let things kind of congeal on their own. Isn't that the case, or ostensibly have, anyway?
Well, okay, here's the deal. Andrew Cuomo, like his father, obviously enjoys having the Republicans in control of the, even though he says not, of the state Senate. Because, you know, he's a sort of a fiscal conservative, and he's afraid that if the Senate and the Assembly get together, they'll build a swimming pool from one end of New York to the other and spend all the money. And he doesn't want that to happen. And that has been the case. However, poor Andrew is now in a bad spot because the progressives in the New York State electorate are mad at him, and they think that he's not really a Democrat. And so, therefore, they are. Although he did very well among Democrats in the recent Siena poll, so he has to worry because remember he almost got beat by Zephyr Teachout, when the progressives got on his case. And so now he's been moving to the left, no two ways about it. So if he, and everybody also knows what the real deal is, that he hasn't done anything about making the so-called, I call them the traitors or the other people, come back to the Democratic Party. He hasn't done what he needed to do. As a result of that, he is between a bad place and a bad place. Don't you see?
Well,
clear as mud, isn't it?
If he wants to promote a progressive agenda, which he says he does, he'll do a lot better if some of the bills that are in kind of locked in the state Senate that never come out to the floor for a full vote are moved through. And that could happen if there was a majority of Democrats who would call the shots on that. Our state editor, Casey Seiler, has a piece today where he spoke with Charlie King, who was the executive director of the State Democratic Committee Party for a number of years. He isn't now. But his advice is that the Andrea Stewart Cousins, Senator Stewart Cousins, and the progressive Democrats in the Senate should reach out to the independent Democrats, Jeff Klein, et cetera, his group, and try to win them over and let them, you know, negotiate and let them have some influence. And there's a way to work this out, and it wouldn't even require.
Well, you make Klein the leader, for example, and tell Cousins, who would be the first woman to, I believe, to be the
opportunity to be
to be the leader of the Senate.
Leader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she just went back and said to Klein, the traitor, that you can be in charge of the whole place and we'll make you president of the Senate.
Well, the argument against that would be that the progressives, who are the majority of the Democrats elected to the Senate, would be giving up power to someone who has been more aligned with the Republicans. It seems like a difficult thing to swallow.
But then the traitors would stamp their feet and say, we don't want to. Hmm. And now, Cynthia Felder, that's another whole story.
Different.
It's a story we probably don't have time for, though.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
To be continued.
To be continued after
this. We can start there, like, just tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes. Please, out of time. We have to get to the other stuff here. But to Alan, thank you very much. Ray,
thank you.
Thank you for filling in. Sure. Appreciate it. And Mike Spain, good to see you. Thank you. We'll be back with another panel tomorrow morning. We'll be back with more Roundtable right after this.